I got up this morning, look around for my shoes. Lord knows I got them old walking blues. Up this morning, look around for my shoes. Lord knows I got them, them old walking blues. Well, I feel like blowing out my sweet lonesome home. Up this morning, all I had was gone. Sweet lonesome home. This morning, all I had was gone. Gonna leave this town in the morning, have to ride the blind. Been mistreated, Lord, don't mind dying. Have to go ride the blind. Been mistreated, Lord, don't mind dying. From head down to her toes, breaks in on a dollar most anywhere she goes. She's got Elgin movement from her head down to her toes. Breaks in on a dollar most anywhere she goes.
Well, Lord knows I got them.
them a walking room.
Howdy doody.
Howdy doody. Let's turn up that mic number 2 and 3. Just push them all the way up. Yeah. There we go.
Okay, then.
Hey, Paul. I'm not doing a whole lot of singing. I'm just doing the quiet.
Let's hear you,
though. Hey.
I can't hear you.
You don't want to hear me talk. You just want to hear me play, probably.
No, but I can't hear you is what I'm saying.
Maybe put this on my lap.
Well, I'm just wondering if that one, let's see, we only have 3 mics, 1, 2, and 3, and see how well you can hear me here?
Yeah.
Okay, see? Do that.
Oh, my. Now, that's big time. That's, I would. Yeah.
Hi, folks. Hi, world. Love you all. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, we don't get told that we're loved that often, you know? So we really love you guys.
And remember, love each other.
Love one another, that's for sure.
Bottom line.
Damn straight.
Love your neighbor, the rest is commentary.
So I want to say hi to my friends out there. I want to say hi and put on a plug for my dear friend Amy's band, Vocal Harmony, and just north of Tampa. And they'll be playing this Friday. And you can check them out, Local Harmony. And I want to say hi to Amy and my other friends out there who might be checking this out. This is a real treat for us. And, this is a really, really tight little room, and they're doing construction outside. It makes me feel right at home.
Work in progress.
Now, we have a few more on the list here. Should we go with little Gary Davis? Yeah, we're going to do this Gary Davis song. Sort of along the lines of All Things Must Pass. This is a song called Death Don't Have No Mercy. And this is a key of E minor. It's got all kind of haunting little chords along the way.
Joey?
Yes, miss.
If you could turn up mic one, then you don't have to eat the mic. Because you like to stay a little away from the mic, so you're not going over. See, this is the limit line here, and you're not going over when you talk.
Thanks for your patience out there, Radio Land. Joey and I played with the band Organics in Santa Barbara Ventura area. If for those of you that might remember Organics, Organics with an X, that was our cool band we had in Santa Barbara with our buddies Chris Shaw, Ken Farmer, and other folks. A lot of other folks. And we had a great run, and it's great to be back playing with Joey here.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Death don't have no mercy in this land. In this land, he come to your house, won't stay long. He look around the room, some family will be gone. Death don't have no mercy in this land. He don't give you time. Get ready in this land. Death don't give you time to get ready in this land. In this land, come to your house, won't stay long.
You look in bed, somebody will be gone. Death don't have no mercy in this land. Death is always in a hurry in this land. You know death's always in a hurry in this land, in this land. Come to your house, he won't stay long. You look in the bed, somebody will be gone. Death's always in a hurry in this land.
Next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz, yes, it's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. That's 2 hours of me talking at you and playing lots of recorded material from the last week or 2 weeks. So stay with us. We're going to be covering the Cannabis Advocates Alliance meeting on Monday, the Homelessness Forum last night, a bunch of stuff before that, and your phone calls at 427-3772 if you choose to call in. Seem to be having a momentary computer difficulty. Don't go away.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. Or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense.
We're going to have songs both of social significance and social insignificance as well, plus lots of talk on the same line. This is Free Radio you're listening to, 101.3 FM. Yeah, still broadcasting, in spite of all the gloomy reports I've given in the last few shows. We had intended to disassemble our antenna, gosh, 3 or 4 days ago. We got a brief extension, but... Wow, is this an old song or what? It's not likely to last more than a week or two. And so, again, I put out the call. Please, if you have any ideas of who would have a free tree available, actually we'll pay you for the space too, or a second story in a house with access to electricity and internet to support your local free radio transmitter, we want to talk to you, and the sooner the better. You can reach us at freakradio.org, freakradio.org, or you can call me. I'm Robert Norse at 427-3772. It's also the number for comments on this show, which is called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Last night I tried to wear a bathrobe because that's sort of my trademark approach to public events involving homeless civil rights issues or the lack of homeless civil rights issues, and the lack of homeless civil rights. And I carry my teddy bear, one of my brood of teddy bears, Eduardo the police bear, Alicia the Aleutian bear. I've got all kinds of little bears. But the whole point is to satirize and yet at the same time draw sympathetic attention and angry attention to the fact that in Santa Cruz it's a crime to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, even in a sleeping bag on any public property, even if you're not bothering anybody or blocking the street or going poo-poo or anything of that kind. In fact, everywhere in Santa Cruz is a crime to sleep at night unless you have a house or a hotel to sleep in. And for those who say, what about the shelters? The answer is, for the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people here, even if it's a smaller number, some say it's 1,000 to 1,500, there's shelter... walk-in shelter for zero people, maybe two or three. If you're in the hospital, they can send you sometimes to the River Street shelter or another bed. And the River Street shelter has a waiting list, but they got waiting lists. And the previously the Paul Lee Loft that used to be kind of, maybe, sort of, some of the time a walk-in place, or there was a chance of walking in, all this at the Homeless Lack of Services Center at 115 Coral Street, not anymore. It's been... ground up into the, gosh, we can make more money by getting a pathway to housing grant attention from the federal and state governments and act like we're providing housing for homeless people when we ain't providing much, if any. And the original purpose of the emergency shelter, you know, for people who need emergency sheltering, is lost. However, if you want to get on the waiting list for the River Street shelter, or the River Street mini shelter, as I call it, not because you're waiting for the shelter, but because a strange provision prompted by protesters about 6 years ago makes it, in fact, a kind of an exemption and protection from the sleeping ban and the camping ban both, to be on their waiting list. And you, at least in the past few months, it hasn't been that hard to do by calling in. You just call their number 24 hours a day, too, which is unusual, but apparently they're trying to create a justification for not getting a lawsuit against them, because we've been hearing some people muttering about a lawsuit, and I'll talk more about that, what little there is to say, later in the show. But the number to call if you want to get on their waiting list in order to make yourself exempt from camping tickets for the period of time you're actually on the waiting list, you can call 459-6644, 459-6644, and you must call back every 3 days to stay on that list, according to what they tell you. Still haven't researched recently whether they're keeping to their promises and discarding tickets, as the city attorney is supposed to do. He may well, or she may well, be doing that. But I haven't gotten a response back from her on that subject. Actually, I asked her about another subject, which I'll be talking about on the air, too, the infamous stay in the performance pin boxes downtown to please the Cynthia Matthews crowd that has passed the anti-homeless laws and the anti-performer laws that severely restrict performing, sitting, peaceful spare changing, political tabling, lots of things of that sort on Pacific Avenue, and essentially turned it over to commercial interests almost entirely. Although you will still see folks out there kind of in the little spots, some of them not in the little spots, but the tickets are severe and people are going to court for them. $200, $300, $400. I think it's actually between $200 and $400 for the citation. And I believe in about 9 days, or maybe less, 6 or 7 days, Alex Skelton and Joff Jones will be going to court for a number of citations for their constitutionally based refusal to show their artwork within these very confined little blue spaces. They've actually now changed their modus operandi to be moving from the sidewalk onto a vehicle park nearby, which they post their artwork on. Pretty nice artwork. I've seen it recently. I like it. I'd like it better if they were open about what they're doing in court, but they have this fantasy that it somehow gives away their strategy. I think it's ridiculous. I think we need to share these issues, and I hope that they wise up and start doing that soon. That's my hope for those two folks. In any case, if you want to call this show, it is 427-3772. There was quite a rally. Well, it's kind of a rally, although that we didn't have anything that we were really rallying around in terms of actions. But there was quite a crowd at the homelessness forum run by the local ACLU last night at the Museum of Art and History, the MAH, as they call it, auditorium. And I'm going to be playing some of that at 7, and then more of it on Sunday when I have a longer show that runs 9:30 to 1 or 2 or whenever. But if you have anything to say about stuff that's been happening to you on the streets, to your friends on the streets, in terms of other local issues in Santa Cruz that you think are important and relevant to poor folks, or even just ordinary folks, mostly concerned here with civil liberties for poor folks, but I'm also concerned when civil liberties are being egregiously violated for the entire community, as they are with the curfews, with the restrictions on the right to petition and table, not just throughout the downtown area, but in front of such so-called liberal stores as Trader Joe's, where even American Civil Liberties Union organizers several years ago were given trespass tickets for giving out leaflets and flyers in the parking lot area, outrageously. Even more outrageous was their failure to follow up on this and act on it. But that's sort of a piece with the ACLU and its general here in Santa Cruz. Failure to address local issues for fear of... I don't know what their motivations are. I'm assuming it's for fear of raising the hackles of their connections with local politicians or rocking the boat too much or maybe getting off their duff and trying to find attorneys to address the issue, or even if they can't find attorneys, making strong public statements and demands. And little of that has been done in the last year or two under the leadership of Vice Chair Steve Plage with a bunch of other folks on the board. What do we got? Stacy Mithril. Other people have joined the board who are nominally liberal and actually at times radical when they were fighting for the rights of the folks at Occupy. But I find that these boards, like the Santa Cruz City Council, tend to tame the wild spirits, and they stop expressing the kinds of real outrage and movement into direct action that they need to do. This is, of course, a constant refrain of mine, nothing new for all you regular listeners. Also, I'm going to be hopefully getting an interview in about 15 minutes with Pat Malo. Pat is a Cannabis Advocates Alliance activist who I was listening to on Monday night, recorded some of his stuff. Recording isn't bad, but I got into the meeting late. This is a group that is dickering with and fighting with the Board of Stupid Vipers. That's supervisors for all you law and order folks, who are trying to severely restrict cannabis cultivation in the county. And I don't know why the cannabis cultivator community is going to let them get away with this, having been successful in smashing the last prohibition effort last year, but apparently they are now more focused on negotiating with these enforcement enablers is really what you want to call these clowns at the Board of Stupid Vipers. That's my view. And we'll be hearing from him shortly. But the one thing I want to finish up, as I sort of a perennial refrain, another one of my, you know, long-standing repeated tunes, is a flashback to 2002 when activist and criminal chalker Becky Johnson, or Beggarbacker Becky as I call her, who is now recovering from surgery, by the way, for those of you who know her personally. She's no longer living in Santa Cruz. She was living in Seaside. But she's still interested in what's going on here. She's still interested in dealing with civil rights issues there, too, although I haven't heard she's doing much there yet. But she's recuperating from a horrendous gallbladder problem. I think she had her gallbladder taken out. And was just sort of this is a gruesome side note, or maybe a necessary medical bit of information for folks who knew her and know her. If you want to get in touch with her personally, call me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'll give you her phone contact, assuming that she wants to be contacted by you. And, you know, you can let her know you're still aware she's alive and not displeased to know that. Anyway, here she is really alive back in 2002 when, if you've been listening to the show for the last couple of weeks, or last actually two shows, you hear her talking on the street corner at one of what I called our Merry Mondays, which we held before the elections in 2002. Candidates Steve Argue and Thomas Levitt were speaking. They didn't get elected, but they said a lot of good stuff on the street corners. She was talking about the city council and the police department's attempt to crush sidewalk chalking, not with laws, but with sort of extra legal enforcement by their armed thugs in uniform. You know, that's the police department who defend all our lives and property, the Santa Cruz Police Department, now augmented by the rough-riding, rough-roping rangers who apparently are more interested in roping people on Pacific Avenue and harassing and despoiling campers on their campsites than they are in really paying any attention to creating a more peaceful, hospitable parks system, which is what their point is, I'd thought. But about half the budget, maybe a little less, goes out to the combination of the cops and the rangers. You've got cops and robbers, we got cops and rangers now, and they're both frankly, on the wrong team as far as poor people go and what they do in terms of enforcement, generally speaking. Not always, but generally speaking. Anyway, here's the rest of this speech Becky gave talking about her court case where she went to court for chalking on the sidewalk, slogans about the sleeping ban, slogans about drawing the attention of the community to the public space theft that the city council was planning, restricting everybody's right to sit down, their right to put up a table. This was the first major constriction of public space was in 1994, but this was the second one in 2002. And this was about her attempt to bring this to people's attention with chalk on the sidewalk, erasable chalk sold at Palace Art Stationery right across the street. But still, she, as a political activist, was attacked for it. And we're going to hear some of the rest of her speech. If you want to hear the earlier part of her speech, go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Huff Santa Cruz, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz, one word, small letters. And you can find the last show and the show before if you look for latest shows on that website. So let's listen in.
At the trial, Julie Hendy. She's a employee of the Redevelopment Agency. Now, Julie undeniably has a personal interest in this case, for she is making work for herself. It's called job security. If Miss Hendy, whose entire agency was set up in 1989 to help the city recover from the earthquake, if she does not make a case for her continued existence, she may have to find herself without a taxpayer-paid job.
And Hendy is still on the job. The redevelopment agency is gone, but she's working with the city manager and that crew to criminalize people who are on the sidewalk with the new performance pen laws, the new laws of be inside the blue boxes, the brass disc boxes. And originally they were blue, now they're brass discs. I think there's still some blue paint left on the sidewalk. Hendy is a notorious conservative bureaucrat, I guess is the way to say, or bureaucrat enabler at the City Hall complex, who's been there for decades now. I think she originally was, as Becky said in her earlier speech, earlier part of the speech, which we don't have here now, but you can hear, as I said before, earlier, if you go to the archives. She was either one of the owners, or she was involved with the business of Cat and Canary, which is I think it was a dress shop or a shop of that sort that was on the corner where you now at Cathcart and Pacific. And went out of business. It was across from what used to be called Hippie Corner, which is where the Five Guys hamburger joint is now. It used to be the Taqueria Vallarta. And before that, it was many other things.
The earthquake was over 13 years ago, and recovery from that devastating event was achieved years ago. Why are we still paying for Julie Hendy's salary? Miss Hendy, when she was under oath on the witness stand, testified that in 23 years of being a merchant, the owner of Cat and Canary, across from the fabled Hippie Corner, that she does not ever recall seeing anyone write with sidewalk chalk in 23 years. Is she suggesting that Tim Rinker and I invented the act of writing with chalk on the sidewalk? She testified that the first time she ever saw a person writing with chalk on the sidewalk was when she saw me chalking on June 28th. Now, it just happens that Julie Hendy and I already know each other. Julie Hendy with the Redevelopment Agency was the chief architect of moving out all the hippies at Hippie Planter and turning it into Yuppie Planter. The privatization of public space. And we assert that that privatization was done to drive out a class of people that the downtown merchants considered undesirable.
Hippie Planter was what was previously an open area and a waist-high planter area that you could sit on without being ticketed, generally speaking, in front of New Leaf Market between the two kiosks on the sidewalk where there was large open space. But Hendy and others, including Sushi Now and other businesses in the area, including the great liberals at New Leaf Market, encouraged the city to close the area off to the public. And that's what has happened now, except unless you are a patron of these cafes, the privatization of the sidewalk. So it moved from being Hippie Planter to being, the private area for New Leaf, and I guess now it's only the Cafe Campesino, which is the one kiosk. It's a business. The other one is a city-run information booth that will provide you with a little guide as to where you can sit, where you can stand, where you can set up a table, and what will happen to you if you don't watch your step. The hospitality-friendly Santa Cruz giving you all the information you need to tread carefully among the vipers.
And I spoke out publicly against that. I don't think Julie Hendy terribly appreciated my comments at City Council. But anyway, when she saw me chalking, wasn't it convenient that there was someone chalking who she didn't like? The court cannot consider the testimony of Ms. Hendy to be unbiased, since she's covered by her own personal prejudices, her self-interest, her unreasonable 23-year memory lapse. Ms. Hendy repeatedly used the word graffiti to describe erasable chalk messages on the public sidewalk. Neither Tim nor myself were ever cited for graffiti. Graffiti has no First Amendment protections that I'm aware of. Graffiti undeniably damages property and will not go away in the normal cycle of events unless the property owner or city worker intervenes. Graffiti occurs on public and private space. However, Tim Rinker and I only chalked on the public sidewalk, the curb, and the street, and not on buildings, planters, or private property. We both testified that we oppose vandalism. We would not promote vandalism. And we do not consider messages written in erasable, easily removed chalk to be graffiti. See, the court must differentiate between a real cost to society or to personal property and a trivial intrusion on private life and activity. Sergeant McPhillips testified he never cited anyone for chalking prior to Tim Rinker. He said, "I don't get down there enough for enforcement." In 14 years, he hasn't. He's been on the force for 14 years, and he's not cited anyone in 14 years for using erasable chalk. And the ordinance has been on the books since 1964. So the court must ask why he hasn't cited anyone before. And the reason is that chalk is not illegal under Municipal Code 9.20.010 and does not rise to the level of defacement. Indeed, if it did, the courtroom would be filled with Girl Scouts, 8-year-olds, more than half the moms in town. Hopscotch has been played by people for over 1,000 years. And if the court finds Tim Rinker and myself guilty of defacing the sidewalk, then the court will be ready to ban children's drawings, hopscotch, kids' games, chalk festivals, first night chalking, as well as the First Amendment activities of myself and Mr. Rinker.
And last show, when I played some of this earlier part of this speech by Becky Johnson back in August, September, October of 2002, I read a little from subsequent court decision news reports. And there was a decision out of Nevada, a federal decision, I believe it was, not sure, but which stated essentially that while it is possible for cities to ban political chalking on the sidewalk, which I think is abusive, an interpretation of the Constitution, they cannot selectively enforce it. They've got to ban everything or nothing. And this is Becky's point here. And this is really, I think, the point we have in Santa Cruz. I don't know, what do you want, a children's brigade out on the sidewalk doing hopscotch? Sounds like an abuse of kids. But it is so clearly an abuse of activists who are chalking on the sidewalk. Messages that they have a right to communicate to the public, and the public has an interest in knowing that, you know, it might be interesting to do that kind of a protest for those who have children interested in doing that. And indeed, when we were doing tabling downtown for the last decade or two, we often had erasable chalk on our table in spite of this attack by the city authorities. And children would come and use our chalk and chalk on the sidewalk. And lo and behold, the police would not arrest them or cite them. They ignored it. Which, you know, they should, of course. But they should ignore everything, and they don't. And this attempt is a specific arrow, aimed at those who are advocating against policies that either the police don't like or their employers, essentially conservative bureaucrats and politicians in the city, don't like. And where they did vote at the initiative of some folks, myself included, to oppose Proposition 64, the state initiative to somewhat legalize marijuana, and hopefully Pat will be talking a little about that. Let's hear some more from Becky's chalking days.
For the court cannot differentiate based on content. In court, when they were asked to name what other cases that McPhillips knew of that had, where citations had been issued for chalk writing, he could only name three. Nathan Kennedy, Kim Rinker, and myself. Robert Norris testified that many other people were chalking on the sidewalk too and not cited. So the court must be considered that selective enforcement of existing laws based on political motivations are not legal and should not be rewarded by the court. I testified in court I knew of only one other person who'd been cited, and that was James Nay, a homeless activist. So let's see, we have three homeless activists cited and one homeless person. Sounds like a pattern to me. Mr. Robert Farmer of Coyote Industrial was called by the Santa Cruz Police Department to power wash the chalk writings that Mr. Rinker and I wrote. He can't be considered an impartial witness either, because he derives his income from the contract he has with the redevelopment agency. He needs to justify the expenses he charges to the city. He testified as the amount of labor involved in driving to the scene, setting up his equipment, then storing it away once the job is completed. He testified he charged the city $100 to clean up the chalk writing after Tim and myself. Nice work if you can get it. The court must consider that the police acted to create a false cost in order to justify ticketing and arrest. Angela Curtis, the field supervisor with Parks and Rec, who's in charge of cleaning the downtown area, testified that the sidewalks are cleaned about once a week. The city has not shown any harm caused by the sidewalks. sidewalk chalk messages other than Miss Hendy's claim that if graffiti is not removed within 48 hours, it leads to more graffiti. When asked what chalking might lead to, she testified it would lead to more of it. You know, more people chalking. Horrors! Miss Curtis testified she needed to come on special calls to clean up vomit, blood, urine, and chalk. Vomit, blood, urine, and chalk? Now, I don't think that vomit, blood, or urine are First Amendment-protected activities. But I think chalk writing political messages is a First Amendment-protected activity. And the city has the greater burden to prove that compelling public interest overrides the right of Tim Rinker and myself and everybody in this city to pick up a piece of chalk and use it. And that these rights are not curtailed by the minor cost or inconvenience experienced by the city. Add to this that if Tim or I ever wrote a message that was so intolerable that a merchant, or anybody else for that matter, just couldn't stand for that message to remain there any longer, they could use a small amount of water and a brush or a broom and remove the message in a matter of seconds. The messages Tim and I wrote were not permanent. They wear away with foot traffic. The wind blows chalk dust away. A light rain shower removes it. A Parks and Rec worker watering the plants can remove it. Ms. Curtis and her team of workers will remove it once a week at the very longest. And anyone, merchant or offended citizen, can remove the chalk at any time they want without any special equipment. Well, it's not possible to go back and ask what the legislative intent in 1964 was when Municipal Code 9.20.010 was written. It is obvious that no legislative change has occurred in 38 years regarding the ordinance. While chalk writing has been ubiquitous and practiced mostly by children without the interference of law enforcement, if it had been the legislative intent to make chalk writing illegal, they would have listed it on the ordinance. If it had been the legislative intent to make chalk writing illegal, people would have been cited and arrested between 1964 and 2000. Writing messages in erasable sidewalk chalk has been a legal activity since the formation of the city. It does not rise to defacement. It does not rise to a crime. It does not deserve the allocation of the time of police, the redevelopment agency, honchos, the courts, the jails. It's just too mundane. It's too ubiquitous. It's a time-honored activity and First Amendment protected. It is a non-permanent form of communication, is not defacement, does not cause damage, is insignificant and trivial, unless you consider the First Amendment, which I don't consider insignificant or trivial. The use of the ordinance this way is not even to regulate time, place, and manner. It is an outright ban, and not just on Pacific Avenue, but citywide on all public property. I hope that the courts on Friday, I hope that Commissioner Irwin Joseph realizes that chalking is not a crime and that he rules accordingly. Please come to my trial Friday, Department 1. I think it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Thank you.
No, Becky Johnson.
All right. And for those who just tuned in, that was 14 years ago. So don't rush down to the courthouse tomorrow. I think I may have made a few more comments on it at the time. I'll play a little bit more. And then we'll be hearing from Pat Malo, hopefully, who will call back on the Cannabis Advocates Alliance information.
And that was Becky Johnson speaking out, actually reading from a speech, Broken Windows, Broken Theory, at the last Monday, Merry Monday, 6 days ago. She also tried to read that speech at the sentencing hearing in court at 1:30 on Friday, last Friday. And we're going to go to that shortly. She's got two more trials coming up for chalking. And I wish I had the actual ordinance with me, because it really does seem to be an ordinance. It has to do with putting marks on curbs, having to do with either putting marks or advertisements or signs or paint. Nowhere does it say words or writing, but that apparently didn't make any difference to Commissioner Joseph. I'm going to encourage Becky to file a public Records Act request, whether her attorney does so or not, since her attorney is a much overworked guy. Ed Fry has had some great success in court, but I don't know. You know, it takes work by both activists and attorneys to get the information as to whether what citations have ever been issued since 1964. Becky says none that she knows of, and we need to get the information on that. It's kind of silly that we have to run around proving that we have a right to chalk with erasable chalk on the sidewalk. But there you are. I'm going to go shortly to the courthouse. I want to mention a couple things before I do.
And so as not to confuse the younger Robert with the current Robert, who you're now listening to, I'm going to stop the tape there. That was a tape, actually, for all of you old-timers who remember tape recording. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We should be shortly getting a call from activist Pat Malo on the current status of the marijuana prohibition restriction crunching that the Board of Stupid Vipers is engaged in, with the able assistance of that great liberal John Leopold and, of course, the constitutional lawyer Ryan Coonerty. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
man, that was old man Trump, Ryan Harvey, either wrote it or posted or created the video along with the music. If you want to check it on YouTube, old man Trump. And I guess it's Annie DeFranco and Tom Morello who are singing it. So check it out if you'd like. I'm a little wary of playing criticism of Trump because he really needs very little discussion, Trump. Everybody in this, many people, there's some, I guess, who are supporters of Trump. Most people who are going to vote for Trump are not, I imagine, going to do so because they like him, but because they detest Clinton and ditto with those who are going to vote for Clinton because they detest Trump. It has little to do with any endorsement of either of the two candidates. And so I encourage folks, actually, to consider a Vote Pact proposals, which is a website, Vote Pact, you can go to, which suggests that you pair up with somebody on the other side. If you are an anti-Trump man, pair up with an anti-Clinton man. You both can vote for some third party you both like and not contribute to the other side. We have a caller. In fact, that's Pat, I imagine. Let's see. Hey there. I think it's Pat Malo calling back.
Yes, it is.
Hey, Pat. Welcome back. So you're the Cannabis Advocates Alliance speaker that I listened to and recorded not two nights ago.
Great. Great. Yeah. It was great to have you there. I was trying to tell you to take the rest of our cookies. I think you had another event going on.
Oh, boy. Thank you for the thought. You had a room. We had about 20 or 30 people there. And I know it was a smaller turnout than when I saw, a year ago when you had the other auditorium, the larger one across the hall at Loudon Nelson Field. Has there been a falling off of interest in this issue? Or what was that simply?
So we fluctuate. We had kind of peak interest when there was the proposed ban a little more than a year ago. But we fluctuate between, 20 and 40, 50 people at some of the meetings that happen. There's just been a lot going on with the county workshops and other opportunities. We had the couple of mountains. We've been having more meetings in the mountains that people have been able to come to.
I remember. I ran into you up in Felton. I'm going to kind of zip into and try to focus on what I'm interested in because you have about, 5 or 10 minutes?
Yep.
And the most immediate issue coming up in a month is Proposition 64, which I brought up at the meeting on Monday, and apparently the entire room, nobody had much to say that was positive about 64, which is the marijuana legalization for recreation proposal. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and also why you think voters should or shouldn't vote for it and what its impact will be here in Santa Cruz, as far as you know?
Yeah, so my position on it is that we have had this recent state bills that have been signed about 6 months ago or so that lay out a new regulatory framework. And there's a chance that, there's more than a chance, but in a lot of ways, this has completely eliminated the collective garden above 500 square feet. And the collective garden is the basis for Prop 215. And that's how all this commercial activity grew out of something that was intended to be an option to be able to provide outside of a commercial context. So, a lot of those non-commercial small collectives have been left behind by these MRSA regulations already.
You're talking about the state law, and you're talking about the practice people have of a bunch of people getting together for medical marijuana purposes and growing a garden themselves in something under 500 square feet that will now be made difficult or illegal under both state law and or the supervisorial stuff coming up in our own county?
Under Prop 215, you could have a two-person collective or you could have a 200-person collective. And the state with its new regulations, it says that collective model stops at 5 patients.
Wow.
So, and that's only if your local municipality will allow that.
Now,
so in Santa Cruz, we've already felt the effects in a sense of this just non-commercial collective going away, because with our old cultivation regulations, it became only if you have X amount of acres can you do these, these collective gardens. But now it's only if you have X amount of acres and are going to pay for the fees for your local permit and state license. So
that is right now, without any change in the law, it is illegal unless you are limiting your collective members and limiting your acreage to what, under 5 and under 500 square feet?
So in locally, we haven't gotten to the 500 square feet. It's over a 10 by 10 is against the county ordinance, unless you have, these acre minimum requirements that starts at 1 acre, and also these different zoning requirements and setbacks.
Now, let me understand this, Pat. This isn't the current law. This is the law they're proposing, right?
This is what we're currently under, 7.126. And the new law, 7.128, that'll be coming, is going to be just like this, but even more restrictions, and you have to get a local permit and a state license. And it's really to address, the big point is it's really to address the commercial activity, not the non-commercial collective model. And so a lot of people fear with 64 is that this, because Prop 215 is a voter initiative, if the state passes laws that, interfere with the voter initiative, you could potentially have a loss, fight it in the courts and get it overturned. But people are afraid if 64 goes into place, which is written to line up with the new state regulations, then it makes the work harder, if not impossible, to fight the MRSA regulations under the new or under this Prop 64. What people mean when they say that it threatens Prop 215.
Now, do the MRSA regulations, the state law, are they more restrictive than the current county law, or less restrictive, or different?
So the MRSA restrictive, it's a total different framework. It's attempted to be a real regulatory framework to deal with commercial cannabis. And so the Prop 215, like I said, was a collective growing protection from criminal prosecution for collective growing.
For medical marijuana.
Yeah, for medical cannabis. And this is a medical cannabis, commercial medical cannabis thing, but it was meant and crafted knowing that we're probably going to get a adult use recreational legalization measure like 64. And so Prop 64 has written in that while these commercial people are applying for their state medical licenses, they can also apply for the their state adult use recreational licenses.
So what's wrong with
commercial cannabis.
What's wrong with 64?
Well, the main issue is that what I described is that it cements the bad things about the new state law, and it makes it harder to change through a lawsuit or impossible. And so that's a theoretical thing. The other, criticism is similar to, the criticism that I have with the MRSA regulations is that I'm not opposed to commercial cannabis. I just think that when we start getting into regulation schemes, if we don't consciously look after the small businesses and the people that can't even afford to get businesses, and the people who have been surviving on the fringe, growing a few plants and trading it for auto work and all that giant unofficial system that's been out there, unless we consciously try to incorporate that, we're just going to put advantage at the people who have the resources to jump through however many hoops that we have. So I think that the MRSA regulations, especially with their mandatory distribution system, make it harder for the small players and impossible for the non-commercial players. And the only people that are left to be able to get through are people with some sort of resources.
And Pat, let me ask you this. What do the supporters of Proposition 64, which is essentially legalized marijuana. Why don't you summarize briefly what it does? I know you've got a couple minutes left.
Well, so they say that, first off, it fits into this MRSA regulatory system. So it makes it so that, there's licenses for cannabis businesses, and the existing medical places can apply for these. And if you're local municipality or county says it's okay, then you can apply and make new cannabis businesses in all these places. But the control is basically left up to the locals. And then there's a few just license types where one of the things is that they, a smaller farm can do direct distribution. So that's a good thing that kind of gets around some of the MRSA things. But then it also in 5 years lets, unlimited large gardens come in if you can get your county or city to okay it. And, people are concerned that that will go into, benefit large business interests and kind of destroy the mom and pop old industry if they made it through these recent hoops.
Let me ask you this, Pat. Most people are not marijuana growers. I mean, and
yeah,
they're a hell of a lot more marijuana consumers, patients, recreational users in Santa
yeah.
Cruz County. Now, how does Proposition 64 impact them, and why should they pay any attention to your concerns about Proposition 64?
So the concerns with that is that it's eroding people's ability. So in California right now, you have the ability to cultivate not for you can cultivate larger non-commercial stuff already, then you'll be able to under this adult use thing, which is great. And it gives one of the things I love about it is that lets people grow 6 plants, but that's less than you are allowed currently under these medical collectives. And the taxation issue is it puts a larger tax burden or opens up the possibilities for larger tax burdens like we've already seen with the MRSA regulations. And it's just it's something that doesn't do enough to let enough people out of jail who have gone into it and who have gone through this. And now we're going to have legalization, but there's not enough done for the people who have suffered under prohibition. And so I'm not going to shed a tear the next day if it passes, but I'm also think that we can do better.
Well, let me ask this, Pat. So if you're not a grower, even a small grower, is there any reason you should vote against Proposition 64, the marijuana legalization law?
Yeah, the reason to vote against it is that it's not good enough to unravel the mess that prohibition caused. And it's giving, it's taking this opportunity to set a precedent for the rest of the country and the world about how we can really make the right law to not just hand over this industry, another industry to wealthy people and the industrial model, but we have an opportunity to do something different and steer the revenue and encourage the right kind of businesses in this industry.
Well, that's nice, Pat, but what about the man who just wants to get a damn joint to smoke and doesn't want to be busted on the street and have to lie about, I've got a medical condition? Or maybe the poor homeless person who doesn't have enough money to buy a $100 medical marijuana card or get to a doctor.
Yeah, well, so that's the other thing. So that people who right now, it doesn't do enough to stop the situation of it being used as an excuse to basically harass people or worse. So I think that we need a law that with more explicit protections, because this also creates new classes of offenses. And it's a good thing because it's taken a lot of the things down to, misdemeanors and things like that. But anything under an ounce, if you didn't have a medical card, was a misdemeanor anyways. And now you can probably, if you're the people who are being harassed or potentially harassed, you're going to be able to be harassed like we see with tobacco, with non-smoking ordinances and stuff. So I'm not saying at all that there's not good aspects to it and it doesn't roll things back in a symbolic manner and in some senses a real manner, but I just don't think it's enough. So it's not something that I'm out there actively campaigning for, but I'm also not dedicating my life to stopping it, because I think that there are some sorts of symbolic victories for the rest of the country. And I also think that there are some opportunities locally for patients and the general public. To one thing is to so hopefully we can shift the tax burden off of patients onto adult use if we're going to have that. And it'll expand some people who weren't comfortable getting medical cards or not couldn't afford to get medical cards and the protection of that, just gaining a little bit of protection from this whole thing.
Well, it sounds like you are actually, although two nights ago you were opposing 64 and you still say you do, you don't really oppose it. You have a lot of sort of stuff on both sides, and it sounds like you don't think 64. I mean, there are people who would argue for it would say, well, this is just a baby step, but it's a good baby step. Whereas there are some who actually argue very stridently against it and say, no, it's just the opposite. Do you have any final thoughts on that? I want to let you go.
So if this is my final thought, if there was not already something called the MRSA regulations and this new regulatory scheme at the state, then I would be fighting a lot harder against 64. I think a lot of the stuff that people talk about that it erodes patients' rights and isn't a step in the right direction for patients, I think that that already happened and is in the process of happening with the MRSA laws. So that's kind of the context I try to start with the MRSA laws, because I was in strong opposition to the MRSA laws, and this is just modeling this, adult use after the new state regulations. I much rather would have preferred an adult use modeled after 215, not these new state regulations. So that's where my opposition comes to this.
Well, let's talk about it more in detail in the future, because I've got what you just said sounds contradictory to me, and I want to give you a chance to talk more about that later. But you probably have got to go, right?
No, and I was just trying to lay out the good sides, because we've listened to the proponents and things like that, and the points that I can see that have a little bit,
yeah.
But taken as a whole, I'm not voting for it. I'm not telling people to vote for it.
Well, let's talk more, and because we have another month before the election comes up.
Yes.
Pat, how can people get more information about what CAA is doing, the Cannabis Advocates?
Okay, so the canadvocates.org is being updated. I think we're going to have somebody revamp it and stuff. But then also we have Instagram and Facebook if people want to just search Cannabis Advocates Alliance. Or I'll be up at a Students for Sensible Drug Policy event on December 15th at UCSD.
That's October 15th?
Yes, October, not December. Sorry.
Where is that going to be?
At UCSC, we'll have more information posted. I don't know the specifics of the building and stuff.
Okay. Thank you, Pat, for calling in, man.
Yep. Great. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, okay, all you potheads, medical marijuana users, and militant prohibitionists, time to call in and let me know your thoughts on Proposition 64. I don't know a hell of a lot about it, but I'll be hoping to educate myself in the days ahead. The number here is 427-3772,
831-4273-722. Eyes of May.
Eyes of May.
And that, of course, was the Fifth Dimension, Wedding Bell Blues. I'm not recommending marriage for anybody. I'm not a fan of matrimony myself. Never been married, and I suspect I never will be. But forming good, solid relationships with people is definitely a good idea and very gratifying. I suppose you can call and talk about that if you want, since we can't get people to talk about anything else. 427-3772. Actually, what's up next is what happened last night. Rather packed audience, as I think I mentioned earlier, at the Museum of Art and History, the ACLU Homelessness Forum. And I was somewhat skeptical of it whenever, actually it was called the Houselessness Forum. You know, it's politically correct terminology. Some folks who are outside do not like to be called homeless. Some don't mind it. Some actually like it. But those who are catching the ear of the politically correct activists have created the houseless terminology, and that's fine. The houseless, homeless, you name it. I'll use whatever comes to my mind if you know what I'm talking about, which is the important thing. I'm always concerned when we hear this general, oh, we have a homelessness problem, we have to deal with it. This is the perennial refrain of Republicans as well as Democrats, Cynthia Matthews as well as Keith McHenry, in the sense that, yeah, there's a problem that people outside, for some reason, are getting rained on and harassed by the police and having to crap in the streets and being miserable and getting sick and dying at 20 years earlier than other people. That is a problem, particularly for them, you know, not for the rest of us, except, oh, tisk tisk, ain't it a shame. But usually what I'm concerned about is the immediate reality, at least in terms of my thoughts about discussing it. I am not out there doing much about it in terms of creating housing by building structures or fending off the police at encampments. That's not something I'm doing, and I admit it. But I am discussing the abuses and hoping that that in some small way can have an impact on the situation by educating a part of the broader community and also deterring the most flagrant abuses or stalling them somewhat. Hard to say if this actually works. But anything that calls itself a homelessness or a houselessness forum, particularly when it's run by a legal civil liberties group, makes me wonder if they're actually going to be talking about the specific civil liberties problems in Santa Cruz that they are doing nothing about or doing very little about. Now, it is true, and you're going to hear Steve Plaich, who is not only running for city council, and he's not only vice chair of the ACLU, but he's the sort of the master of ceremonies, I guess the phrase is, for this particular event. And I believe he's going to tell you that, oh, we have this lawsuit pending, and we're looking into getting something done there. And this is what he told us a year ago, too. And I'm not just blaming him, because I think it's an institutional problem with these kinds of groups, whether it's SCORE essentially ignoring real racist abuse by the police departments in Santa Cruz County and Santa Cruz City and the University of California and the private security agencies, but talking a lot about retraining folks and getting more money for some computers and a grant for interns, you know, that sort of shit, which is what SCORE did 7 or 8 years ago. And the NAACP, I find, has a similar problem. They all do. And some people said to me, oh, you're a traitor. You know, you're criticizing these liberal organizations, just like when I attacked the Democrats and Hillary Clinton. And also, early on, I attacked Bernie Sanders and this idea that, you know, the bend over for Bernie group, as I called them, were, a good thing to get involved with or a good thing to support. I don't know if you should support Jill Stein or Gary Johnson or nobody, but, you know, work instead on important issues that you can invite all these various clowns, if they want to be help, to join and work on, whether it's tenant rights or police abuse, you name it, restoration of public space from essentially an encroaching police and commercial state, a corporate state. People have been talking about climate change, which I almost never talk about, but it's, you know, been blasted at me so much on Democracy Now that I'm probably going to have to start reluctantly trying to bone up on that as well. In any case, some people were disappointed with this forum. They talked to me afterward, one person particularly, who may call into the show, who knows, that, you know, there wasn't more specifically done, specifically by the ACLU, that where they urged the overflow crowd they have to get together and support a specific legal initiative or a series of protests to reoccupy the city hall grounds at night and end the curfews, or end the curfews on the levee that are harassing the homeless, or stand in front of the bulldozers as they are, people are doing, you know, with pipelines up in the northern U.S. and North Dakota, or, you know, even something. Instead, it was all about the elections, which I've often discussed here or mentioned with some regularity, are to me a charade and a phony pursuit that has very little to do with meaningful change in this community. A lot to do with ego politics, as one of my friends recently suggested to me. It has a lot to do with a fantasy about how if you can only get your fingers on the gears of power, you can turn everything around, the same kind of fantasy that Sanders was catering to or pandering to, all the while saying he was going to support Clinton if she won, which pretty much everyone knew she did, particularly when nobody was calling her out from the Sanders campaign, at least he wasn't, on the harder issues of her phony delegate selections and such, because he didn't want to alienate the community. And who knows, they might get a Republican like Trump elected. And that now, of course, has become the big ticket. You know, you've got to fight Trump no matter what else you can do. You've got to fight Trump. You've got to fight all the previous Republican candidates. Got to fight Romney. You know, got to fight McCain. Got to fight Bush. These are the big issues. And, of course, you know, more people have been deported under Obama than under Bush, as far as I know. And there's just an ongoing dual mentality that I think regular listeners are aware of. So I don't have to tell you. The issue is, of course, going to be, you know, when people vote in the voting booth, that's not the issue. The issue is, what are you doing beforehand? What are you doing after? And I've invited people to come on the show. Chris Crone I spoke to last night. He told me he would think about it. I don't expect to have him on the show, but he might. Never can tell. We do have a caller, though, which is always a relief and a surprise. You are on Free Radio.
Well, hi, Uncle Robert. It's David Silva here. Cha-cha-cha.
You were the man in the front row, as I remember, last night at the...
What a mistake. There was no way to escape being in the front row like that. It was just dreadfully painful. I couldn't believe that the facilitation could be so loose and just allow sort of all this enthusiasm all just fly everybody in all kinds of different directions, and everybody had an idea that didn't agree with anybody else's whatsoever, and there was no agreement or consensus. There was no call to action, or action teams would have been nice with all that much enthusiasm, but no. It was just like a squandered opportunity. It was good to see that much of a turnout, though, you got to admit. Even if it was kind of like, hey, why did candidates campaigning me at an event like this, you know, they kept coming up to me and asking me if I got. I said, "Well, are you going to repeal the man?" "Oh, well, yeah, we're going to do that." Said, "But you know, we're not advertising that."
Yeah, I remember.
You got to be fucking kidding me! I'm going to get back to the NFL. That's just my little mini report.
Well, thank you, David.
Okay, bye bye.
So I'm going to play some of the actual houselessness shindig. Boy, I don't even know if that got out on the air. I hope it did. And you can be the judge yourself as to, well, not whether it's of any value, but whether you have any thoughts yourself on the same subject, what can be done next. I mean, there was a lot of enthusiasm at this rally, and a lot of strong stories were told. In fact, it was particularly people who were outside were very eloquent about what they we're concerned about, we're enraged about around places like the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and names were named, and specific agencies were held to task. But again, as David Silva just said, there was no action groups formed. I tried to circulate petitions asking people to volunteer, and I'd get some names, but we'll see if often these names don't tend to lead to much of anything. But we'll see where that goes. And let's hear some of the Houselessness Forum, and maybe from your own thoughts and from your own reflections as you listen, or if you were there, give a call in, 427-3772, and let me know what you think. Let us all know what you think.
A packed crowd here at the Ma Center. It looks like, I don't know, 75 people?
All the people I asked to be on the panel aren't here.
Okay.
Is there anyone that you know who's homeless in here you think might be a good speaker to be on the panel?
I'll take a look.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
And the panel is beginning.
My name is Steve Plage. I'm the vice chair of the ACLU in California, Santa Cruz County Chapter.
Yay.
Boo.
I look around this room, and this kind of a crowd really reflects the concern that people have in our community for people experiencing homelessness. Not only are you here, but there are many of our friends who are experiencing homelessness also here, so we'll have an opportunity to really discuss the issues and perhaps come to some idea about how we can move forward together as a community and create some positive outcomes for our friends experiencing homelessness. I would like to mention that there are ACLU board members here other than myself. Thank you for the guitar player. Thank you so much, my friend. Wonderful, wonderful. Excellent. I'd like to point out in the group that there is in the back, Keith Lazar, board member. Lee Brokaw, board member. Stacey Falls, a board member. Abby Samuels, a board member. There's Abby here. And I want to give you an idea of just how the evening is going to go. I will be doing a very brief overview of local homelessness. Our friend Wes White, who is here from Salinas, will give a brief overview about the homeless situation in Salinas and Monterey County. I will then introduce our keynote speaker, Mike Rhodes, who is here today. Mike, thank you so much. And then Mike's presentation will be about 40 minutes or so, and then we'll follow that with question and answers from you. We thought about doing some index cards, but I think it's really much better just to have people ask their questions of Mike, and we'll keep it free and open and transparent, really, you know, really try to delve into some of the issues that I think and Mike believes I think are important. Then we'll take a five-minute break. Thank you, David. We'll take a five-minute break or so, and people can go outside, take a bathroom break, maybe get a little nosh. There's Joe Schultz who provided some great food for us. And then we'll be coming back in for a panel. The panel would be Mike Rhodes and Pam Whalen, his wife, who also an activist for homelessness. Wes White will be on the panel, Abby Samuels from ACLU, and we're hoping to get one or two of our houseless friends to appear on the panel so that we can ask them some questions. You can ask them some questions. I think it would be a rare opportunity for us in Santa Cruz really to do that. So let me give you just a brief overview of houselessness here in Santa Cruz. As you know, by the Homeless Census and Survey, they estimate there to be 2,000 unsheltered men, women, and children every night in Santa Cruz. Now, the people who do those surveys, applied survey research with whom I work, will tell you that is at least 50% underreported. And even that is not accurate because the last homeless census survey they did in 2015, it was a very short time to get a point and count survey is what they did. So there are many, many. So the landscape of homelessness is extremely challenging in Santa Cruz. And it's something that once we understand the enormity of the problems that we have in terms of finding safe shelter, transitional housing, services for our homeless friends and neighbors, 72% of whom, by the way, were Santa Cruz residents before they became homeless. These are our friends and neighbors. These are not transient people who are traveling around the state because we supposedly have great services or are homeless friendly. These are our friends and neighbors, so please keep that in mind. In terms of the local activism around homelessness, certainly Huff and Robert North is here. They have been working to repeal the camping ban for decades in Santa Cruz, and they do deserve some recognition. Also, a year ago, on July 4th, a group came together called the Freedom Sleepers. Their mission was to abolish the camping ban in Santa Cruz, to repeal it. They have been, and we have been, conducting community sleepouts every night, every Tuesday night at City Hall in protest to the camping ban. Last night was the 65th consecutive Tuesday, so they deserve much credit for the grassroots kind of determination, commitment, and organization that really shows. The goal of Freedom Sleepers, and I will speak not as a vice chair of the ACLU, but as a member of the Freedom Sleepers, was really to have grassroots activism to get our city council to react to the criminalization of homeless folks, because we feel that it is a failed policy and has been for a long period of time. We were successful in getting onto the city council agenda a safe sleeping program, one that's developed by our good friend Robert Phil Posner, who's here this evening, an RV parking program, and also a program for the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women to make safe women who are homeless and in danger of domestic violence, which they are, in fact, every single night. Also, there was a Lane Amendment, as you recall, went before the council to strike the word sleep from the camping ban. All of those were, unfortunately, resoundingly defeated. So we are here tonight to talk about what we can do moving forward. One other thing that has prompted some activity with the Freedom Sleepers is that the failure of our grassroots attempts to move legislation has prompted us to form a legal team. In cooperation with the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, we are preparing a lawsuit that will challenge the camping ban in Santa Cruz. We are coordinating that with the upcoming election. We're hoping that a progressive council, perhaps if we get it in Santa Cruz, may with the stroke of a pen repeal that camping ban. But I can tell you, as an activist, that either by court decision or by the action of a progressive council, our sleeping ban and camping ban in Santa Cruz will be stricken from the books, and that will happen. And ladies and gentlemen, when it does happen, we will have to have in place the kinds of sheltering options and opportunities to create positive options for homeless people that we hope we will be discussing here tonight and will come up in for more further discussion as we move along. More than that, I would say, just in closing, that as an activist, I believe that when we create positive outcomes and options for homeless people, it probably will not come through institutional solutions. It will come through grassroots organizing, the kinds of things that we do here today and now, and move forward. That's the kind of thing that will really make a difference. And I think that the fact that many of our homeless friends and neighbors are here this evening to see how we're all going to work together is testament to the fact that we can do that, and I believe that we can. More than that, I'm not going to tell you, because I will not remind you of what many of you already know so well about the homeless situation here in Santa Cruz. I will like to bring up now Wes White. Wes is a longtime actor.
And before Wes begins to speak, and we've heard him before, and although he speaks very well, and he may have, I think he had some new stuff, not sure if he did, but even the old stuff bears underlining and reiterating. I'll point out, and I want to remind you, you're listening to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. A call-in number is 427-3772. We're listening to canned stuff from last night, fairly recently, but still, live voices get priority here, so if you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. If you have anything to report around police abuse, or if you want to be on the air, if you want more information about HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, call the HUF line at 423-HUF, 423-4833, area code 831. Comments about Steve Plaich's remarks. I don't have a lot of criticism here or a lot to say. The notion that suddenly there's a legal team after the sleeping ban initiative that Don Lane finally got on to the city council agenda. It was supposed to be on the agenda, according to my understanding, back in September and October. Micah Posner was going to try to do that, but if he did, he didn't succeed. If he maybe had a different understanding, but instead it got on March, in March after the winter, after the Freedom Sleepers were nearly, I want to say dead, or I should say nearly dispersed. The Freedom Sleeper began as a strong movement, and then it became only a very few people, but who hung on, and now it's growing again, or at least maintaining itself every Tuesday night. There'll be a Freedom Sleep 66 coming up at City Hall. Tuesday is also another city council meeting there. Oh, thrill me. Very thrilling. Be still my heart, I guess, is what I was thinking of saying. So there were legal initiatives being discussed and even supposedly prepared for and announced by Steve for months, if not years, before that. And then there was also a big shindig when Tristia Bauman of the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty came to town last December and spoke at a kind of a benefit for the Freedom Sleepers. And I believe there was another rally, a large public event, when the video about the Freedom Sleepers was shown. It's actually a series of videos, which the Freedom Sleepers video was only one last July or June, thereabouts. The legal proposals have and supposed organizing efforts just haven't been either by Huff or by Steve Plaich's Homeless Legal Assistance Project adequately organized. They just haven't been. And I'm often very skeptical of trying to make any hay off of claims that you're doing this, whether you're on the board of the ACLU or whether you head the Huff organization or whatever you do, whether you're even in the Freedom Sleepers. Don't talk about these legal initiatives as if they're doing anything. I'm not aware they are. And I'm not aware of everything. I'm not on the inner circle of these groups, and they don't advise me either. I put through calls to Tristia Bauman, and she does not call back. And it's sometimes hard to wrest information from people who are on the boards. Like Steve Plaich can be often a very useful source of information, and at other times he's very closed-mouthed because he has a... One has to say, if not a loyalty, he feels bound by his membership on these boards. So, for example, when I want to get the straight dope about M.H. Can, it's really hard to do and to try to hold any of these officials accountable in these groups is even harder. I mean, Sarah Leonard may be a fine person as the head of M.H. Can, but if members of her group are complaining about her behavior, they deserve to have an appeal process to the board of directors. And Plaich does not facilitate that in any way. In fact, he tends to deny it and say that Sarah Leonard's word is law and just goes, which is crap, very simply, C-R-A-P. And that's in no way diminishes my respect for Plaich and Sarah Leonard and the organizations involved in terms of the good they do. But that kind of closed process, that kind of lack of transparency, that kind of lack of accountability is exactly what... is the problem in bigger organizations nationally, at the city council level, and also among the so-called left organizations we have. So let's hear some more from this, but before we do, we'll hear from you. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Uncle Robert, it's David again.
Again? Oh, no.
In danger of being the perpetual optimist.
At least you call in. You know, go ahead.
Yeah, I also don't want to become the perpetual cynic because, unfortunately, that event, if you step back from it just a bit, you see a guy leading, giving a talk who's selling books, and you see a panel of people who represent different organizations, different activities that are making their pitch based on personal stories. And you see the rest of the people that are operating, keeping these going, all either candidates or working for candidates. It was like kind of like an unofficial candidates forum, and yet it's ACLU. I don't know. I think that's a little PU. I think they could have cleaned that act up a little bit more. But, hey, it was a forum. Gee, you know, it wasn't a rally, Robert. You call it a rally. It was no. It felt like it had the spirit to become a rally, but it was not constructed to be so.
No, I understand that, and I think it wasn't really a forum either. I mean, I only noticed three.
No, it wasn't a forum either.
I only noticed three political candidates. I noticed Plaich, Crone, and one other. Who was it? Was there one other? Maybe it was just those.
Well,
two.
I was approached by four or two of them claiming to represent the whole slate.
Well, there was a campaign manager, a personal worker for Drew Glover, And I think Stacy Falls was there, and she's Steve Schnarr's partner, or one of, you know, closely connected to his campaign. But, you know, they were, the candidates did not give their positions on these issues or talk about their records on these issues.
The progressives, you know, that progressive slate, they each and every one of them have a very, very good record, you know, in social services, but their comprehension of civil rights sometimes needs to be slapped in the face. Hey, guys, we're talking about, you know, do you want to build luxury slave quarters rather than set the slaves free? Hey, you know, this is civil rights for sure. It's not fucking, excuse my French people, but, you know, it's just amazing that people that are wanting to run the city as if it were a county and not know what they're fucking doing are asking us to, like, you know, chill it. You know, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to repeal it, but, you know, just don't tell anybody. You know, that kind of fucking democracy just pisses me off. I'm very much a patriot. You know that.
So what you're talking about, David, is you're referring to the fact that only Plaitch among the candidates has really repeatedly come out around the sleeping ban.
Only Plaitch.
Opposing it. However, although he says he's opposing it, and, he, you know, he does, he, you know, the actions that he has taken with regarding, you know, supposedly dealing with legal problems for homeless people and initiatives to decriminalize have been not just unsuccessful, but looks like they've been more token and for show. I mean,
the campaign has them so blinded that they don't know when showdown time is.
I'm not even talking about the campaign, David. I'm talking about what Steve has done for the last few years as a so-called homeless legal assistance project. You know, that's a project that I've directed people to, because Steve shows up, to his credit, every week at the Red Church serving bagels.
Yeah,
he has a phone number that at least he used to answer quite regularly. I'm not sure if he does so now. He's very preoccupied with, you know, campaign work, walking around, pounding on doors, and so forth. So, but anyway, I don't want to talk about the election. I don't think it's worth your shit. So,
no, it really doesn't.
That doesn't
smell
interest
like
me. What interests
it
me
doesn't
is
smell
what,
like it.
What interests me, David, is what we could have. You know, what we talked about, you and I and others at the Huff meeting before, which is somehow seeing if there is any energy or interest in specifically focusing on immediate direct action around particular issues, whether it's police abuse or merchant discrimination or the criminalization of the homeless around the sleeping ban, you name it.
The police stealing property, I think, is like a number one issue with a lot of homeless people.
Right, and the question
that
then
survival gear, I think we should refer to it.
So the question then is not just, wow, that's wrong, and oh, ain't it a shame, but what specifically are we as an organization and as a community to do about it? As an organization at HUP, we don't have the person power to do diddly squat, because people who are in that group are, you know, pretty much disabled, distracted, struggling in their own way. There isn't the person power there to do much other than talk about it and maybe advertise about it. We could throw, and I hope we can do something, you know, in terms of.
Well, I feel there's a more and more coalition and more people in unison that there needs to be action taken. And Huff acts as a kind of a heart for that creature coming alive. Whereas, you know, politicians and people like, wonderful people like Plaitch act as a sort of brains. But, you know, you are also the soul of it, Uncle Robert. They, you've got it right. They've got it wrong. It has to be, you know, taken care of now. And I've always stood with you on that. And I know, you know, I believe that because I'm going on this fast on Election Day if they don't fucking repeal it now.
Well, we'll see how that goes, David. You know, I've been skeptical about how long you've been sustaining that.
I know, and not
because of your lack of sincerity. You are one of the most sincere and good-hearted people
that.
I know, but that's not the issue.
I'm just insipidly sincere.
Yeah, you are sincere, and you also, you know, your reach exceeds your grasp, if you will. Frequently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hey, I'm sleeping every Tuesday night with the Freedom Sleepers for Tuesday night, and I'm practically crippled up for like three days or so afterwards. It's rough.
Wow.
You know, I can't imagine a person like, you know, my age or with my condition and, you know, dealing with as much stuff I have to deal with. At least I just sleep that one night and I get to come home and take a hot bath to get warmed up and I get to cook in my kitchen and that's because I'm a veteran. If I wasn't a veteran, I'd be out there on the fucking street. I know it.
So you're about 70 now, right?
73.
Oh, boy. Well, keep it up. Keep up the good work there.
Okay. That's my bio.
Hey, well, call again if you'd like. Or anything you want to add before you go?
Well, I was just those two things. It really is a rally. And also, it really did have a lot of the campaign stuff, and peddling of books and all that sort of stuff a little too much for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I like Mike's work. Mike Rhodes is a fellow who was selling his
book. He's incredible. He's incredible. But, yeah, that's the circuit he's having to work right now. And I think he's done an incredible job. I'm impressed with the book already.
I mean, it is true that I get skeptical when I see these people showing up on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Show peddling their books.
I don't mean to be cynical, like I said, but it just has that feel, and together with all the politics, and having to be sit through all those those stories. I know all those arguments, and I know all those stories already. And I was just felt like I was imprisoned in the dungeon in that front row. It was a painful, painful thing. But maybe some of those other people really needed to start feeling that pain.
Well, you could have started a sleep out in the room there, David.
Believe me, I barely drugged my ass through that meeting. Oh.
Well, listen, thank you for calling, and I'll give you the last word.
Okie dokie, okie. Hey, keep the faith, everybody. It can be.
Hey, well, we'll see just how thin you get in the course of your upcoming fast. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Call in if you'd like. And let's hear a little bit more of, this time, I guess, Wes White talking at the houselessness forum the ACLU threw last night.
Activist in Salinas and Monterey. Wes is going to give us a brief overview of their recent camping ban and the recent activities that have gone on, which Wes has been a major advocate. So, Wes, please come on up. About 5 minutes. All right, Wes, you can do it. Thank you.
And Wes was also videoing the whole thing, which he's posted a number of his videos online. I guess if you look for Monterey County Homeless Union or Wes White on YouTube, you'll be able to find some of his stuff. He's done the Salinas City Council, the folks speaking back to the Salinas City Council, the folks protesting outside the Salinas City Council, the flagpole community that was there every night for 6 months until they were dispersed last Saturday night by the get out or we'll arrest you and put you in jail for a year ordinance for being at a form of peaceful protest at City Hall and also a form of survival encampment in a city that provides zero facilities for those people in terms of sleeping at night. Here he is.
Hopefully I can do it less than that. Okay.
Okay.
So basically we've been... We're trying to stay inside the camera, so that's fine. I got a camera in the corner, by the way. We've been dealing with this camping ban for a year. There was a ordinance, no personal property storage, just personal property on city property. And that's how it started, which is basically a get out of town ordinance, which is kind of where you guys have been at for a long time. So that's why we've been looking to you for a little bit of direction of where you've been at. So we've been fighting that. We took it to court. We won. They did repeal the old ordinance, but they made a new ordinance making Chinatown an emergency to be cleared out, and they started wiping everybody out, and I was heckling. I spoke to call it heckling the city guy, the shot caller of what can stay, what can go, what needs to be picked up, and what can remain behind. And I was able to tug on his heart for a little bit, but, in passage of time, hey, somebody's got to pay the bills, and that's kind of our real overarching issue, right, in society, is that money is driving stuff instead of the character, of content of our character. So they wiped out Chinatown in March. And as a protest of that, we started staying in City Hall and over at the flagpole, kind of what you guys have been doing. But we did it every day. We did it for 6 months. Basically the second part of the administrative procedure was to connect people with services.
and they were not doing that whatsoever. It was a lie. They put it in there to quell people's concerns, but in reality, it was just a straight up lie. They never connected anybody, and I videoed all this stuff, and, you know, or at least in the beginning, it kind of got too much. Man, they did 100 sweeps in the last 6 months, and they obliterated a lot of people's stuff, man. So what do you do, man? You got broken and no connections, so that's why I went to City Hall to say, hey, man, you forgot to connect us with services. Here we are. Connect us. And they totally blew us off. They blew us off so mad that they made a new ordinance, which basically was, they shouldn't call it the West White Ordinance, and that's not by me, that's some other people who said that. You know, we had about 40 people out there, and we were definitely a black eye in their face. They didn't want to see it anywhere near their front doorstep. They didn't want to see it anywhere on their front street. And now it's like the anti-breeding ordinance of Salinas, the silent sleeping man, Captain Santa Cruz. And that's kind of where we're at. We're at the same place we were a year ago, but we've been fighting it pretty good. And we continue to fight, man. And that's why we're coming here, for solidarity, camaraderie, insight, and ending this stupidity cycle altogether, man. You know, if we could sanction campsites and, like, follow rules, you know, make it whatever, militaristic, you know, a little bit of trash, make your bed, look for a job. You know, we could track that data with through service providers and still find out, you know, people are doing 3 jobs and they're not even getting 20 hours a week and they ain't getting no benefits, they ain't even got enough money to get a place. So, you know, what kind of circle are we running? Why do we keep on lying and making up garbage because people are too busy to even see that it's a lie? And we need to knock that off.
We'll have questions later. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Wes White. Thanks for coming. Being here. Great guy. Been in solidarity with us for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Oh, there are a couple of seats out in front. This is just such a great crowd and turnout. Thank you so much. We're going to be taking questions later.
Can you tell there's a seat out in front?
Yes, I just said there are seats out in front. Thank you. Now it is my very great pleasure to introduce our keynote speaker for the night. Mike Rhodes is the author of Dispatches from the War Zone, chronicling homelessness in Fresno from 2002 to 2015. His extensive coverage of this issue as editor of the Community Alliance newspaper defended homeless people's human rights and led to significant changes in public policy. Mike was an organizer in 2016 of the class action lawsuit brought by the homeless against the city of Fresno. The $2.3 million settlement forced the city to stop bulldozing homeless encampments and compensated the homeless for their losses. The ongoing coverage has exposed public corruption, identified the homeless issue as a vital concern in the community, and highlighted alternative projects that provide the homeless with the dignity and the respect they deserve. After leaving the Community Alliance newspaper, Mike wrote Dispatches from the War Zone. There are copies of that available over here, and Mike will be happy to sign those for you later, so keep that in mind. I'll finish my introduction of Mike, and this is really, truly a great pleasure, with a quote from Jeremy Alderson, who is the director of the nationally broadcast Homeless Marathon radio show. He says, "For years I've been telling anyone who'd listen that Mike Rhodes is the best reporter in America when it comes to covering homelessness. He knows homeless hangouts the way a crime reporter knows the police station. And he knows the homeless better than a sports reporter knows a baseball team. Above all, he reports on the homeless people like they're simply people with legitimate needs and concerns. On these pages, you'll read the real nitty story that will tell you why you don't want to be homeless in America and why nobody else does either." Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mike Rhodes. I'll be out of your way.
It's a real honor to be here in Santa Cruz. I mean, I'm
closer to the mic.
Well, how's that?
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Better.
Okay.
Was.
There we go. How's that? Works for me. A great crowd. We've been traveling around with the ACLU for maybe 2 months now. We've been in Humboldt and Redding and Chico. and Monterey, and now we're in Santa Cruz. It's really exciting to be here. This is a great crowd. I like to start off by reading a little bit from my book, because that'll give you a sense of how it flows, and it'll give you a sense of how I got to where I am and why I'm interested in this issue, why I'm passionate about this issue. I could hear voices in the back of my print shop in downtown Fresno getting louder. The yelling was coming from the alley, and with the roll-up door open, I could see a homeless man trying to escape the taunting coming from a police officer who was still on his bike. The officer was calling the homeless man a human cockroach, telling him to get a job, and that his girlfriend was a whore. When this incident took place in the summer of 2002, I was not a homeless advocate. In fact, I was generally annoyed with having to clean up the trash, urine, and human feces from the alley so that customers and delivery people could get to their shop, to our shop. But I was disturbed by this affront to common decency and soon headed to the alley to see what the hell was going on. The officer was now off of his bike and in the homeless man's face, continuing to insult him. The homeless guy was trying to evade the officer, but he could not get away. Finally, I stepped into the middle of the scene and asked if the homeless guy, his name's Dave Ritter, would like to come in and recycle some paper and aluminum plates. He was more than happy to get out of his current circumstances, which were probably not going to end well. After getting Dave settled into his work, I returned to the alley where Officer Mike Smith was pacing back and forth. The officer stated to me that Dave is a worthless drain on society, and that he intended to arrest Dave for an alleged incident that had taken place earlier in the market on Ventura and Van Ness Avenue. No doubt the officer expected me to sympathize with his efforts because I was a white, middle-aged business owner who, like many others, were fed up with the homeless. Instead, I asked him for his name and badge number and filed a complaint with Internal Affairs. In the complaint... In the complaint, I wrote that, quote, that the behavior exhibited by Officer Smith was unprofessional and demeaning. The officer appeared to be provoking a confrontation, and that police officers have a duty to protect, not harass the public, end of quote. I waited for a response from Internal Affairs and even called them a few times, but I was never informed of an outcome in this case. A year or so later, in an informal setting, I asked Fresno Police Department Chief Jerry Dyer about what had happened. He assured me that the incident had been taken care of, although he did not say exactly how it had been resolved. Although I never found out what, if anything, happened to Officer Smith, I do know that he continued to work with the homeless in downtown Fresno for many years after that incident. At the time this happened, I was the editor of the Community Alliance newspaper, a monthly alternative independent newspaper in Fresno. The paper is the voice of the progressive movement and supports peace, social, and economic justice. My curiosity was aroused by this incident, and I wanted to know more about what was going on with the homeless in downtown Fresno. Dave, who I'd never met before this confrontation with Officer Smith, said that the police were always harassing the homeless when they were north of Ventura Street in downtown Fresno. South of Ventura Street is the old industrial section of downtown Fresno. There are some warehouses, light manufacturing, and many abandoned buildings in that part of downtown. Not too many Fresnans visit the area or even know it exists. On the other hand, the area north of Ventura Street was being developed with the new Fresno Grizzlies baseball stadium having been built that year. Optimism about downtown Fresno, north of Ventura Street, was up, and developers and builders did not want the homeless giving potential investors a bad impression. The Poverello House and the Rescue Mission, the two largest social service agencies in town that focus on the needs of the homeless, are both located south of Ventura Street, which gave powerful and influential forces an argument for why people like Dave should not be wandering around in the business district of downtown Fresno. In 2002, friends of mine who work in grassroots groups like Food Not Bombs told me about their experiences in working with the homeless. The Food Not Bombs operates under the assumption that it does not need government permission to feed the hungry and gives food away to anybody who shows up. The Food Not Bombs folks are amazingly committed, showing up on the same day, week after week, sharing what they have with the poor. Food Not Bombs activists such as Dallas Blanchard and Kelly Borkert shared their knowledge and introduced me to people, homeless people. There emerged a pattern of stories about homeless people in downtown area north of Ventura Street being woken up, harassed, and told to move on. Homeless people living south of Ventura Street, as long as they kept to themselves out of sight, were largely left alone. My assumption when I first started getting involved in this issue was that this was mostly about economic development. The builders and developers had a financial interest in keeping the homeless out of parts of downtown where redevelopment was taking place. The elected officials at City Hall were directing the people, were directing the police to push the homeless out of downtown because their presence there was not good for business. The mayor and the city council did that because builders and developers are major contributors to their political campaigns and are a major factor in getting them elected. The homeless had no political power and therefore were being pushed around by forces outside of their control. I was about to find out that it was a lot more complicated than that. And what I mean by that is that the cleanups, and I use that in quotes, that were taking place at the homeless encampments were really demolitions of homeless people's property. The police would come through with the city sanitation workers and bulldozers behind them and simply sweep up everything in their path, pick it up in the claws of a bulldozer, and put that into the back of a garbage truck, which was then crushed and taken out to the dump. I watched this time and time again from 2002 to 2006. And during that time, I was in contact with Robert Norris, who's, I think, here somewhere in Santa Cruz. And so, you know, I would talk to Robert. He's got a radio show, right? And so I talked to him on his radio show about what was going on in Fresno. And he says to me, well, why don't you do something about it? You know, just like watching it and writing about it's really not enough. And you should get a preliminary injunction or a temporary restraining order against the city of Fresno from destroying homeless people's property. And it was just like it clicked. It was like, duh, yeah, we should do something. And so he'd call. I mean, I was actually out there in the field talking to him about this when that struck me. And what I was seeing in the encampments was that people were, of course, losing their tents. They were losing their sleeping bags. They were losing their clothing, which are survival items for people who were out on the street. You have to have that to survive. But they were also losing things like their diabetes medicine, their blood pressure medicine. People were losing invaluable items. One woman lost an urn that had the ashes of her granddaughter. Another man that I know, a friend who is homeless, lost a photo album of his wedding in one of these raids. And it was just like crazy because people were, this was being reported in the mainstream media, the news, television, radio, newspapers, as cleanups. And most people in the community really looked at this as being, oh, well, they're cleaning up the encampments so that they're not so dirty. In fact, the Fresno Bee reported, that's our main daily newspaper in Fresno, that city crews tidy up haven for the homeless. That was their headline on the story. city workers tidy up Haven for the homeless. So on the same day that that happened, I was there. The reporter was standing under a shade tree talking to the police captain about what was going on, of course. And he was being told their narrative about these cleanups. What was really happening out in those fields is that people were losing everything that they owned. In fact, there was an incident that happened at that time where a woman, Lisa Apper, from the St. Benedict Catholic Worker Project, stood in front of one of these tents and refused to move. And the bulldozer would come up with its big arms and surround her a couple feet away. The officer in charge, Ray Wallace, would come up to her and threaten her with arrest, and Lisa stood her ground and said, "I'm not afraid to be arrested. I'm not going to let you destroy this person's property." Eventually, Ray sent the bulldozer around. The tent was spared. And within 10 minutes, a slight African-American man came out of that tent. He'd been sleeping under blankets, could not be seen by somebody just opening it up and looking inside.